Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
You're listening to the Orchestra Teacher Podcast.
Welcome to the Orchestra Teacher Podcast. This is Dr. Charles Laux. And really excited. It's been a few weeks since our last podcast because things have been busy. I've had our orchestra large group performance evaluation or festival or whatever you want to call it. I had that last week. It took my four orchestras. They did very well. And I am really glad now that that is behind me. But we have an awesome guest today. And I wanted to welcome Mr. Ryan Silvestri, and hopefully soon to be Dr. Silvestri. We're going to talk about that. Ryan, thanks so much for being here on the Orchestra Teacher Podcast today.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm happy to talk with you.
Ryan, tell us, you were at Wando High School in Mount Pleasant, South Carolina, and you've been there for a while. How long have you been in South Carolina or Mount Pleasant?
Yeah, so I actually started my teaching career. This is year 12 for me at Wando, and I started year one in the classroom here. Straight out of my master's degree. So I did my undergrad at Florida State and graduated there in 2009. And then I did a master's degree at UNC Greensboro and in 2012 and then moved here straight from grad school and just kind of, grew the program here and just we settled in and love the school, love the community. So it's kind of become home.
Yeah, that's awesome. I had moved to Atlanta in 2012, but I think we had talked about that. We both started that new part of our career, or you started your career in the same year. So
yeah,
very cool. It's hard to believe it's been that long.
I know it's like a different lifetime. And I've since moving here, my wife and I had just gotten married and now we have four kids of our own. And
yeah, so four. Like,
yeah, we have.
Wow. Four. I missed one or two. That's amazing. Amazing. How old are they?
8, 6, 4, and 2. So we have.
You are a busy man.
We are. So I drop the older three off at school and then come to school and do my thing.
So. Wow. That's great. So and tell us about your program at Wando. How many orchestras you have and your schedule kind of.
Right. So when I first started here, I had two orchestras and I also taught guitar. I had two block classes of guitar, actually a block and then two orchestra classes. And then for a year I taught AP music theory. And then as the program grew, I went to just orchestra all day. So I have three levels of orchestra and we're on kind of a modified block schedule.
Okay.
So we have block classes, but we also have each block's divided into two periods. So I have two block classes of kind of my freshman, sophomore orchestra. So I see each of them for 90 minutes a day.
Okay.
And then I have my upper two groups are skinnies that meet so they meet all year for 45 minutes. So it works out. It's a little bit strange, but it really helps as kids progress through the school. They can still do orchestra and do all the AP classes and other electives. So this is the schedule I've started my career on, but I've never known anything different, but it seems to work pretty well.
Yeah.
The only challenge is maybe those kids, like once they're in freshmen, if they audition for the upper groups, but maybe they aren't quite ready for it.
Yeah.
So that's where their schedules can get tricky. Where as a sophomore, if they don't get into that skinny class, can kind of create some issues. But overall, it works pretty well.
That's awesome. There's always so many, as we were talking a little bit about in the last interview, about schedule conflicts and trying to get. Yeah, sometimes you have to be creative on these things. I know I have a lot of kids that don't eat lunch, and so I let them eat lunch in my class because, like I said, I'd rather have them in my class than
Absolutely.
You know, not at all. So I'd rather have him eating and in my class than not there. So, well, very cool. And then, so tell us a little bit about your dissertation. You're doing it, what university?
So yeah, I'm doing a bachelor's of music education, or sorry, doctoral of music education degree. It's through Liberty University in Virginia, and it's all online.
Great.
And to be honest, when I started the degree, I was a little skeptical. It's not really a plug for Liberty, but I was like, oh, online, I wasn't really sure, but it's been great. I've learned a lot, lots of writing, lots of research. There's, you know, I feel like this degree 10 years ago might not have been possible. Like I can get so many resources online in terms of articles and scholarly journals. So that's been a good experience. It has been, you know, with four children and a full-time job, and I perform a lot as well. Like, you know,
I don't sleep too much.
I drink a lot of coffee. But you know, it's the end is in sight, which is good.
Well, that's good. Yeah. I remember writing mine and, I hit, you know, the young boys and their, you know, baseball and everything that we did. And it was just, it was, the time that I wrote was 3:30 AM. I would get up that early and do that. So I feel for you. But when it is done, you're going to be super happy and obviously reap all those rewards for getting that done. So tell us about your topic as much as you can tell us.
Sure. Yeah. So my topic is I'm doing an applied research study on improving recruiting practices of high school orchestra directors using what's called basic psychological needs theory. So it's a subset of another kind of motivational theory called self-determination theory. And what it proposes is that all humans have, kind of like we have the needs for food and water, we have these three psychological needs for competence, relatedness, and autonomy.
Okay.
And I kind of came across it through my research because as a high school director, I feel like we're all of us need to recruit, whether you teach elementary strings, middle school, high school. Mm-hmm. But I feel like at the high school level, we have a little bit of a, you know, a handicap in that, you know, my colleagues at the middle school, they can recruit any of the fifth graders. You know, they can go and they have almost, you know, unlimited or at least as big as the fifth grade class for the amount of students they have. But for us, it's really only those eighth graders who play strings. Now, you know, we talked a few minutes ago, there are other ways, a few kids here and there, but not enough to build a program. So as high school directors, it's really important. And as I was doing my research throughout this degree, every study I'd read about, like, why do kids continue? Like, the kids who are already in our programs, what does the research say about it? And those, if those needs are met, the competence, relatedness, autonomy, and they're not mutually exclusive, they all kind of have to work together. Study after study kind of found that they will continue in your program. So if they feel like they're successful, they have good relationships with you, with their peers, and the autonomy is where they want to have a voice in the program. Is it, you know, do they have a little bit of influence, or they have a say, maybe even in repertoire? Or I even found for the autonomy, you know, I know my students, you know, maybe yours do, they don't love technique time, right? When we get the method book out. But if they have an understanding of why we do it and like why I'm asking them to sight read and do a scale or do a shifting exercise, they'll, you know, have a little more ownership of what they're doing. So if those needs are met, they'll stay. And so what I'm kind of looking at for my dissertation is how do we communicate that to our, you know, the eighth grade students that are coming to them? How do we show that our programs meet those needs and kind of how, you know, how can we improve that practice? That's so important because if we don't have students, then we don't, you know, there's a lot of factors that affect, you know, not only ensemble balance, like I will talk about my MEA performance later, but that was a great group. I had 12 firsts, 12 seconds, three violas, 15 cellos, and two basses. So, and granted, thankfully they were like all state violas. So they were great.
They can play out.
Yeah, they can play out. But, you know, recruiting is, because of that, and then also schedule. So like, as I mentioned, when I started at Wando, I taught guitar and not my favorite, but I enjoyed it. It was a different part of the school that I'd get to see kids I wouldn't otherwise. I didn't mind teaching music theory. That was, you know, it's a lot of work. You got a grade. I had 24 kids in my AP theory class.
Whoa.
So yeah, it was kind of a dumping ground at the time for kids who had a hole in their schedule.
That's a big class.
But you know, so with recruiting now I'm able to teach orchestra all day, which is great. And then, you know, lots of us have, you know, whether you're trying to get an assistant or keep your job, you know, there's just so many aspects that, you know, it affects a lot of what we do as elective teachers. So that's kind of why I wanted to look at that in my.
That's a great topic. And it's always something that every teacher is kind of thinking about, like you said, because it's either going to be, do I want to build my program or I want to keep my job or I need to get that assistant. You know, that's what I'm hoping for in the next, you know, so many years is that, my feeders are just so great. And there's a lot of kids. And what's that tipping point of what do I need to get an assistant? You know, and there's no magic number in my district, but you know, that's kind of something that I would like to have. And I've never had an assistant before. So it would be really kind of cool just to be able to work with somebody else on a, a daily basis. Yeah. So this is very, very, very cool. And then, so you're looking to complete this this semester or next semester?
Yeah. So hopefully this semester. I had a survey I was doing. So if you are a string teacher, you maybe saw that. I put it on my Facebook page. I sent out some emails and I put it on the school orchestra and string teachers page that Dr. Barnes runs from USC. So I got a good number of responses from that. So I'm kind of working on analyzing that data. And then I'm doing some interviews with and a document analysis, kind of, you know, finding recruiting material that people use and kind of putting that all together to see what can be most effective for teachers.
That's going to be a great, great study and very applicable. That's my favorite type of research to read. It's like, How is it going to impact me and other teachers in our profession? And there's a lot of great studies out there, but some of them are like so specific into, you know, vibrato wavelengths or whatever it might be. And not to say that that's not a great topic, but something that really will that we can use and learn from. So right. I love that. I love that. And then tell us, you just came off of a very big weekend professionally with your first presentation that you said that you've done. And I heard everybody said it on Facebook, at least, everybody said it went great. And then your performance at your MEA. So tell us about your, you know, preparing for that and how, you know, how why did you decide to finally, you know, present a proposal and do it? Like what made you do it? Cause you've been teaching 12 years, you know, and you've had a lot of accolades. What took you so long?
Yeah, I guess for the session. So yeah. My session was called Bridging the Gap Between Middle and High School Orchestra.
Perfect.
Kind of like a framework. So I kind of incorporated my research for that. So I started by talking about, you know, the recruiting, the retention first, because mm-hmm. I feel like that's the, when we look at recruiting, it shouldn't be isolated from what we do every day. As I was reading a literature review, there was this quote that said something like, every decision that we make as a teacher can impact retention. Mm-hmm. So whether it's, you know, how you interact with the students, like I greet mine at the door, there's a program called Capturing Kids' Hearts where you shake their hands. And so I actually love it though. I get to know them. I can kind of read them.
Yeah.
They can read me and we kind of just welcome them to the classroom. The music you pick, you know, that's a whole nother study, repertoire. Like, you know, you don't want to be too easy where they're bored, too hard where they're frustrated. They have to like it. You know, how many rehearsals you have, when your concert is, when your trip is, all those, you know, all those little things, everything we do can impact retention and just different ways. So I started by talking about, you know, competence, like no matter what we talk about with recruiting, kids want to be successful. So eventually, you know, they might stick around for a few years, even into high school, if they're not successful musically, because they have friends, they like the teacher, they like the trips. But at some point, you know, they might realize, hey, I'm not great at this. So we need as teachers to find ways to help the students at the top, our all-state, you know, bass player in the back who can read everything on day one versus, you know, the violinist in the back who's struggling with the F naturals on the E string.
Right.
So that's so important. The relatedness, making sure, you know, all the things we do, like I said, greeting them at the door, those interpersonal relationships with the students, with you.
Mm-hmm.
We all go on, a lot of us go on trips, and I always tell, you know, I tell my parents, I tell my students, you know, I don't do those trips to sleep better at night. because it's taking, you know, 50-100 high school kids across state lines overnight. You know, it's not something.
Yeah.
I enjoy them. I usually have a great time.
Oh, yeah.
But it's not low stress in that
no.
way.
No.
But it's great because there's always those kids, and, you know, we're all in the midst of festival season. And I always say that I don't really ask my students at this point, are you planning to continue next year? I wait till after the trip and we've had a successful CPA and then we go on the trip and have fun. And then usually, you know,
that does it.
Important.
Yeah. I've had some students change their minds. Like we'll do it earlier. And then, I had one particular, thinking about, after a spring concert, we had a really fun spring concert. We did, you know, movie music and pop rock and all kinds of things. And she's like, Dr. Laux, is it too late to change my mind? I'm like, no, it's never too late. So that's just like, okay, I gotcha. Like that makes me so happy when that happens.
Right.
Yeah.
But yeah. So anyway, I started and talked about the retention and then I kind of used some of what I'm assuming my study will be. And so I guess, you know, it took me so long. I just kind of felt like I had that, you know, the confidence and the research to back it up. A lot of the things as I was doing my research on recruiting and retention, it would, you know, confirm things that I found in the classroom. They're like, well, for me, this works really well. And then you research to back it up and be like, oh yeah, that's why. I figure I have a better understanding of why it works now. And so that was,
it's not just anecdotal. And now it's like,
right,
okay,
exactly.
Yeah. That's fantastic. Yeah. That's fantastic. Yeah. And then, your performance, you took your top ensemble, I'm assuming.
Yeah.
And so that was obviously apply and they got accepted. Tell us what you performed. I always put people on the spot and they're like, I forget.
No, that's okay. Yeah, it was real recent enough. So we opened with actually just a real short little piece called The Sleigh by Richard Kuntz.
Oh, don't know that.
It's actually a choral piece that they transcribed for strings, but it's just kind of fast and flashy, kind of a good opener. Then we did the Grieg Ace's Death Second, which
great.
Kind of sounds a little morbid, but it was actually probably my favorite piece they did. I feel like one of the things I teach well is tone and just control, and I feel like they did a great job of that one. So that was a
lot of fun. We could talk about some of the strategies you use to teach that. I would love to hear some of the things you do.
And then in the middle, we did the last movement, the Cubier Congo from the William Grant Still Danzas de Panama, which was a lot of fun. That was that was the first time I had taught that piece, and so we started that one in the fall, and it's a great piece, a lot of fun. They did it well, but it's very rhythmically challenging, and there's just lots of intricacies in getting that together. So that was probably our most challenging piece ensemble wise. Then we did the I forget who did it, but the Andante Cantabile from the Tchaikovsky String Quartet.
Great.
So there's a string orchestra version of that, and then there's a really cool new Michael Hopkins arrangement of Rhapsody in Blue. So we closed.
Seen that.
Yeah, I was at a reading session at ASTA last year, and we had done that, and it was a really cool arrangement. And my program kind of has a little, and I told Michael this at a session when I went to one of his at ASTA, that when I started here, my first year we were on the podium, you know, getting ready for the winter concert, just kind of sight reading music, pulling stuff from the library. And the kids were like, hey, well, why don't we do Carol the Bells? I'm like, do we have it? Because it was my first year. I didn't know the whole library. They're like, yeah, we do. So I stopped class and I went back to open the cabinet. And I'm like, well, and we always kind of mark down when we perform things just so I know. And for record's sake, like, you guys did this last year. They're like, it's okay. We love it. And so I brought it out and they already knew it and they liked it. So we did it. And this is year 12 at Wando. I think we've done that Hopkins Carol the Bells like 9 years since I've been here. Just, it's a good crowd pleaser.
It's a perfect arrangement. You know,
It's a lot of fun. I've done it with all different, I've done it the whole program. I've done it with one group, two groups. So there's a lot to teach in there too.
And
so,
I think Mike had said that's like the number one seller of all of his pieces.
Right. Yeah. I went to a session. He's out of everything that he's done, that Carol the Bells is his best.
So. Yeah. That's fantastic. Well, it's a great program.
It was good. And I tell the students, and you know, it's true that when I apply for something like this, I found that we did a conference performance back in 2017.
Okay.
And then the year after that in 2018, we applied and did the ASTA NOF. I feel like those 2 years were when I saw the most growth in my program, like just in terms of musical ability and size. And
when you're shooting for that goal, you know, and pushing the kids that next level.
Right, because we're all so, you know, we all kind of get ready for that fall concert. Then after that, you scramble, get something together for the winter concert. Then you get CPA. So it's really good for the kids and for myself to have, you know, we did half of the program in the fall. We did the Ace's Death and the Cumbia.
Yeah.
In the fall. And then
You have to. I mean, you can't put it all together.
Yeah. And then we did the other half on the winter concert. And then we have a weird schedule here where we didn't finish second semester, I think, until, I don't know, January 18th or something.
Okay.
Like that.
You come back and do a couple weeks. Yeah.
Yeah, so we came back and just kind of, we didn't learn anything new after winter break. We just kind of polished all five pieces and put it together. But it's great for the kids to, you know, I tell them, like, in the real world, you play pieces more than once. Like, you're going to play Dvorak 9 more than one time.
Yeah.
And there's, you know, every time you play it, it'll get a little more comfortable. You'll live with it. You can do more musically because the technique gets more comfortable. So it was a good goal for the students to have. I think they were proud of it as well. And, you know, you get a little publicity too, which is great. Yeah. I have wonderful band and choir programs at my school, which is great, but you know, the orchestra gets overshadowed a little bit at times. So it's good to put them out there and kind of see that they're rocking.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, that's fantastic. Congrats to you and your students for that performance. And I wish, you know, wish I could have been there to hear it. So
thank you.
South Carolina MEA is fun. I was there, I think, 2015. It's been a little while now, but it's a great conference.
I'll have you back. So.
Yeah, that would be super fun. Be super fun. Well, that is awesome. And then to tell us, you had mentioned that you enjoy teaching tone and that kind of thing. Tell us some of the maybe some of the strategies that you use or some of the ways you go about thinking about that and teaching that.
Yeah, so I guess kind of just like the more nuts and bolts thing. I start almost every class and all levels of my orchestras, whether it's my freshman or my top group, I will do just like a rote scale warm-up with a just like a D scale. I use Chris Selby's Habits books.
Yeah,
but great book. Before that, I would do, yeah. And so he has in the beginning, it's a one octave D scale with an E at the top just because it works out well. And so I'll give them a pattern. Sometimes I go methodically through the book and be like, we're going to do eighth notes and triplets and sixteenths.
Yeah.
But then a lot of times just use kind of rhythmic patterns from our music that we're working on. And so they can not worry about the left hand and just working on that.
Right,
and so, yeah. And so I like to start with that right hand just for the rhythmic development of the ensemble, but also their tone, just really, you know, those three bow variables, we talk about the weight, speed, contact point, just getting them to unify their ensemble sound. And I talk to them, especially like my freshman group, like, you know, I'll talk to them a lot about the first semester, the first quarter. I'm not maybe necessarily teaching them anything new. Like I am, of course, but in that technique time with the bow stuff, it's all stuff they know, but they can do it individually, but getting them to get that ensemble sound. And I think that as a teacher, especially for like the stuff we did for MEA, like the Tchaikovsky, the Ace's Death, really as a teacher, I have the sound that I want in my head and being able to communicate that to the students when they're playing it and, you know, kind of really unifying how they use their bow, what part of the bow, the speed, the placement. And I always tell them that, you know, my students all know if they ask, what's Mr. Celestia's favorite orchestra? It's the Cleveland Orchestra. I grew up in Ohio.
Oh, you did?
I grew up in the Youngstown area.
Oh, so. I forgot. Maybe we had talked about that. You know, I'm from Mentor, so.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, so we're not too far. Oh, yeah, wow. I guess I missed that.
Yeah, and I love being in the South. South Carolina is great. But, you know, where I was in Youngstown, I was an hour from the Cleveland Orchestra, an hour from the Pittsburgh Symphony, a couple hours from Columbus, so. You know, in Cleveland, so, you know, their string section is phenomenal.
So and good.
It, you know, that I always say that it's like, you know, it's kind of like the conductor said, obviously he doesn't have to say this, but like, you're going to be, you know, 3/4 of an inch from the tip of the bow. You're going to move your bow 47.5 miles per hour. It's just so unified. And so, you know, as a musician, I have a sense of what I want a piece to sound like and being able to communicate that to my students. So we have all sorts of, you know, I make all sorts of weird analogies. Like I can tell them the nuts and bolts, use more weight, move the bow faster, get closer to the bridge. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I'll also have sorts of, you know, flowery things. You gotta, you know.
Yeah, you have to elaborate and come up with weird things that will hopefully get them to remember, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
So like we were in that Hopkins arrangement, there's one part where the rest of the orchestra accompanies the first violins have a little melody. And I was like, the first time it's like mezzo forte. And then the second time it's piano and it's in flats. And like, it's gotta be like the special sauce from like, you know, but like, I would say special sauce and they would do it. Like
boom.
They hear it and then they correlate it, you know? So
I'm all about like finding those, I don't know what you call them, like just keywords or something like that. Or just that save you so much time teaching, but you can shout it out. They know what you're talking about.
Right.
Yeah.
Or like power position. I remember years ago I went to, I think I was in college, so I went to an ASTA conference with Charles Evsharian. From Star. Yeah. And he was just, I think it was about the bow. All I remember him is just being up there, you know, beasting on all the major concertos, just brilliant violin playing. But he would talk about that power position, like, you know, tall posture, bow with a frog, and just kind of ready to go. So, you know, giving them those catchphrases, like you said, okay, guys, show me your power position. And they kind of
boom. Know yeah. And it happens instantly and they never forget it. And that just saves you a lot of time, you know? Yeah. That's awesome. Very cool. So what else do you have for the future? What are you thinking about or what are some of your goals or aspirations for your program or other professional goals?
Yeah, absolutely. So for the program, like you said, for the session I did at NEA, I also talked about reflecting on your growth and or lack thereof, maybe you're going down, like understanding why and how you can solve that. So like for the growth, when I started in 2012, we had 54 students, I think, in two groups. So it was a smaller program.
Yeah.
And then at our peak, I think 2017, 2018, I had 167, 170 something. And this year we're sitting right around 125.
Yeah.
And for us, the big thing, obviously there was COVID, but the bigger concern for us was there was another high school in town.
Oh, so they split you guys right. off. So, okay. Well, that's not nothing that you can control.
Right. Exactly. So there was, we have three middle schools that feed me, and when they built the new high school, it's, I get 100% of one, then it's about 70-30 another one, and then about, oh, I only get about 10% of the other one. They live on the islands of the coast.
Oh, wow.
So that kind of obviously was the big reason for our numbers. But I have there's a new young teacher at one of the 100% direct feeder who's killing it. She's, so she's doing an awesome job. So I think I'll probably grow about 30 or 40 next year even.
That's fantastic. So, that's a good growth.
Yeah, it is. And so I'm kind of, that's kind of for the program, the short term is kind of getting back to those numbers, which will be great. Cause, my lower class, my youngest class right now, they're split into two and each class is only about 20, which is enough to get stuff done, but yeah. I like the bigger class.
I know there's just something about having a class with, for me, that sweet spot really is 40. Like I love 40, or 30, 35, 40, but when you have those classes of 20, sometimes, especially if you have a group of really quiet kids.
Yeah. My first block is like that. Sweet kids, they do what I tell them, but it's 90 minutes of just sitting.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, I'm really animated in the classroom. They're good. They're not being disrespectful or anything. They're just quiet kids. So they sit there and they do what they're told, and it's,
My first class of the day is that way. And there's 40 in there, but they're all quiet. And they're all like, I have to check to make sure they have a pulse sometimes, just because and it's not because they're bad. They're just, they're amazing. They did awesome work, but they're very disciplined and they're just a lot of introverts,
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's great. Fun to see the differences in classes and not just classes periods, but as they come in and graduate and things, they all have a personality.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. And I talk a lot about, there was a class I had, I think, around, it was interesting, because I think one of the peaks, the peak of our size, at least as a program, that 2017, 2018 year, I did have a freshman class that you might call them challenging. They were, they played really well. Actually, that was I think you came, and I remember we talked about that. They played really well. Mm-hmm. I had my freshman group right now, they were doing about grade three stuff. That year, they were playing solid grade four really well.
Yeah.
And they were killing it, but they were characters, to put it lightly. But then the thing I love about teaching orchestra, though, is that we get them year after year. So by the time they were seniors, they were great people. They were, a lot of better musicians. And they were the ones who would talk about it. I'd say something about freshman year, they'd be like, oh, Sylvester, we were bad. I'm like, it wasn't pleasing. But then they kind of learned what I expected, and I wasn't, they realized, okay, this is, we want to be successful. We want to do well. And he's not going to give up on that. He's not going to, do whatever. And so you get to see that growth in kids, whether they come in really quiet and they, make that musical growth, or they come in like a little bit wild and then they,
it's fun. It's really fun. My sophomore classes, they're wild children a little bit, and they know it. And it was really cool because we just had our, like I said, a large group performance evaluation, and we did our pre-LGPE concert the week before, and they fell apart. They were struggling, and they into their music, they wouldn't look up, they wouldn't watch, they weren't listening. Their ears were closed, and so after we listened to the recording and went through the having them listen and evaluate, they were really embarrassed. And then all of a sudden I said, you guys know this, but you have to trust in yourselves that you can get your head out of your music, look up and keep your ears open and be alert as you're playing. And then they went last week and they came away with straight ones. And
nice.
I was really proud of them, but it takes, sometimes it takes a scary moment, moment.
I'll never forget one of my first years here. My younger group was taking, we were doing Danza, and then, which, the ending is all lots of fun. And then we were doing the Isaac Arrangement of Brandenburg II.
Okay.
And they were, again, great group, good group of kids. They worked really hard. Then it was the day before CPA. And I think I was covering a class for someone else. I just said, well, just send them to me and they'll like sit in the back and watch. Mm-hmm. And I think it must have spooked them. Maybe there was, you know, friends from a different class. And I'll never, this was probably 8-9 years ago. But they were spooked. The same thing. They couldn't even get through it. Like we'd started, I put the metronome on and it was like, it was the last 20 minutes of the day. And it was just falling
apart. What's happening?
I was scared in the warm up room. I was like scared to start to see. And they, the same thing. They pulled it together and did it. And it was fun. But sometimes it takes that little bit for them to realize, you know.
Mm-hmm. It's amazing what concentration will do too. Like difference between the day to day rehearsal and then the performance or anything like that. It's amazing what kids can do when they really focus.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. That's awesome. Well, it sounds like things are going really, really well. And I wish you the very, very best with your finishing your dissertation. I know it's one of the most challenging things I've had to do. And, you know, like I said, the rewards will be worth it. And I can't wait to read it when it's all done and be able to you know, see the conclusions that you've come to. So
it's done as well. So it's a big process. I've learned a lot, but it'll be nice to be on the backside.
Oh my God. I can't imagine with, you know, your workload. And I know you do play a lot of gigs. I see all those things you do. And then having four kids, it's remarkable.
In some ways it's been, I feel like doing the degree, like it's helped me to have a better home life balance in some ways for the school stuff. Like I do my best here at Wando every day. And, you know, do I check my email? I have it on my phone. Do I see it when it comes in? Yes. Do I reply to emails at night anymore? No. Like good. It can wait. It can wait till the next day. Okay. So I give 110% when I'm at school. And then when I go home, you know, I give 110% to my kids and my wife. And then when they go to bed, then I work on the dissertation. So I've had to kind of, compartmentalize a little bit. But I'm, you know, my hope is that it's been kind of a good discipline that way so that when I'm done, I'll hopefully maintain that balance. And, you know, I used to, before I started this degree, I used to like to read more just for fun.
There's things that you have to give up, obviously. But that work-life balance is important. And I think you're doing the right thing by, setting those boundaries. Because, if I didn't have, my kids and doing and coaching baseball, we just started baseball. So I had baseball startup week and LGP the same week. It was an insane week with tryouts and the draft and all that stuff we had to do. But if I didn't have one of those things, it'd be amazing. Like, you know, how much you could really focus on just one, but that work-life balance is really important and setting boundaries, something that everybody needs to do.
Yeah. And I know you're the interviewer, but I have a question. How do y'all, because it's just interesting to see how people in different parts of the country do it. For your LGPE, when do you do that rep? Is it more like a festival performance where you take stuff from the fall? Because you guys have three pieces, right?
Yeah, we have three pieces. And what I usually do is at the winter concert, we play one. I try to pick the most challenging one that we've been working on longer. Ours was earlier than it's ever been, February 7th and 8th. That's so early for us. And so I think in all my 28 years of teaching, this is the most stressful year just because I felt the most compressed. So we started, I did the winter concert a little bit earlier. We did it like the first week of December. So then those last couple of weeks, we started reading the new stuff for LGPE. And then when we came back, we hit it hard. We did a camp on the 20th, all day thing where we did two rounds of rehearsals and we did a sectional, an hour and 10 minutes of sectional. And then I had a clinician come out and do a sight reading workshop too. So they had a little sight reading piece in there and we did pizza and we had a party at the end and everything. So kind of an intense thing that we did. Then we had our concert the week before and then the event. So it was very compressed. So, and it worked out well. I mean, that group that I mentioned, you know, they got a superior, but they were kind of that higher end of this or the lower end of the scores, I should say.
Yeah.
But, they pulled it off and, from where they came from, you know, nobody knows when you get scores. I mean, that scores aren't that important, but what we know is where we came from and how we ended up and the growth that we've had. And with all my groups, it was amazing. I mean, we did the first and third movement of the Algar Serenade with my top orchestra. And the third movement, we had done the first movement in the fall, third movement we started working on, and it took them a while. And like a few weeks before that concert, I had to have like a meeting. We're like, guys, this is not even close. Like, we're just like scratching the surface of these notes. Like, this is Algar. We got to dig deep here. Right. And so that really kicked him into gear. And then they pulled it off, you know?
Yeah. But well, it's important to not to, I know we're wrapping up, but kind of in my presentation, I talked about the competence too, where I know we're all in, like, you know, myself, we all want to get the superior, and like, you know, we'd be lying to ourselves if we told us we wouldn't be disappointed if we didn't. But I think it is important that you said the growth. Like my freshman group last year, I did get that was my first excellent I've gotten it with that group since I've been teaching. But same thing, they were right on the edge, you know, the mm-hmm. highest excellence. But for that group, I made a point to them at the end of the year. We did this Susan Day piece in the fall with lots of C sharps, you know, and it was
quite a
fall concert. Yeah, it was tricky. But then in the spring, they did, I think it was an Adele something. I'm not sure it was a pop mm-hmm. tune they wanted to do, yeah. And they killed it. They did great. So I made sure at the end in May, when we were watching the concert, we played the Susan Day for them. And then we all kind of cringed a little bit as we watched it. But then I played right back to them their spring concert, and they could hear the difference. So I think that was so big for them. It's not that, okay, that was bad. Yeah, it wasn't great. It got better. But they could see that, okay, throughout this year, all the stuff that Sylvester makes us do in the book and the
boom,
you know, and yeah. all that, you know, that when he gets real intense about this, they can see the fruits of the labor, which I think is really important for the kids to see. That payoff.
Absolutely.
It doesn't necessarily have to be in a score or a competition, but just right. for them to recognize their
yeah. growth. And I think that's a huge part of that retention piece that you had mentioned, you know, is that feeling of accomplishment and that they're going somewhere, you know, right. Because that's what keeps kids in is that those feel good moments. And yeah, that's awesome. So, well, Ryan, been awesome to chat with you. Will you be at ASTA this year?
I won't make it this okay. year. I was there last yeah. year. So schedule wise, it didn't.
No, it's make it happen, it's but. Always challenging. So, well, maybe I'll get to see you some other time. But I appreciate you being a guest. It was great to get to chat. And everybody, I will put Ryan's contact information in the podcast description. So if you want to reach out to him for, you know, presentations or guest conducting or just to ask him about his research, he'll be able to help you out when he has time. Of course, put your email on the back burner. But but again, thanks so much for being here. I really appreciate it.
All right, thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, everybody, that will do it for this episode of the Orchestra Teacher Podcast. Charles Laux signing out.
Thank you for tuning in. For resources and more information about the Orchestra Teacher website, podcast, and YouTube channel, visit www.orchestrateacher.net.